My name is Jack Harrison Quintana. I'm representing Grindr, and I'd love to see the show of hands before that I could not see from the front of how many people are very familiar. Okay, not everyone. Well, I'm going to do three things today. First, I'll start with a brief overview of sort of who we are in general, and then I will tell you a little bit about my program in general, which is Grindr for Equality, which is sort of our health arm as well as working on human rights. And then I'm going to end with a little bit of a discussion of not just what I can do for public health, but also what sort of we need back from public health. And in particular, people representing the STD community outside of HIV specifically. So Grindr itself is a social network that was founded 7 years ago to connect gay and bi men, as well as trans people who are interested in meeting gay and bi men. And it was innovative in that it was the first platform of its kind to use geolocation to bring people together. Since then, you know, there are a lot more apps that use kind of the same system, but we were really the first. And in terms of our overall reach, we have about 2 million users a day. 70% of those are outside of the U.S. and 30% are inside. And our users represent 197 countries. So it's my job within all of that to think about really how can we use this network, which is the biggest network of gay and bi men in the world, for social justice broadly. And I have two goals. One is to create a healthy community of Grindr users, which is really what all of you are interested in, and then also to create a politically engaged community of Grindr users, specifically in reference to the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people, but not sort of exclusive to that. So right now, we're really talking a lot about voting, you know, in the upcoming election, which impacts LGBT people, but also impacts all of us, right? So the main tool that I have to achieve these two goals is our in-app message system. And you can see one of them here. Basically, when you open the app, you know, you can see behind this message that you get what we call the cascade of guys. They're mostly guys, who are the people that you can connect with. And before you get there, when you open the app for the first time in a day, you're going to receive 0 to 3 pop-up messages. And many of these are paid advertisements from brands, including things like Uber. It could be sort of a local organization. But then many of them also come from me. And so you have to engage with these messages before you can get to sort of the main functionality of the app. So we have a captive audience, and it's very large, as I mentioned. And so this is kind of the primary way that I can communicate with gay and bi men all over the world. And as you can see, I can also create messages that go out to specific slices of our population. All of our messages are geolocated. It's based on either sort of by city or zip code, or it can be radius around a point so that I can go down to as specific as a city block, which I've used in a few outbreak situations, or as large as the entire world. In addition to that, I can target by things like gender identity, because we have people who opt into being identified on their profile as being trans, HIV status, which is the same. It's sort of, you know, it's only opt-in. Nobody is forced to disclose their status, but if they do, then we can send tailored messages to them. We can send messages by race, which, and I noticed, by the way, that I left off black as a race on here. Rest assured that we can target by that as well. And I do target by race often in collaboration with people of color-led health and LGBT organizations so that our users can feel like they are receiving messages that are sort of from their community, for their community, to reduce the stigma of the message and hopefully increase the impact. And then also age. And the two ways that I've kind of used age in the past 2 years is really around the HPV vaccine to make sure that people are getting a message about that before they age out of being able to get the vaccine. And then we've also done some work around HIV and aging, especially for the CDC's National HIV and Aging Awareness Day. So you know, what you can see basically is that we have tremendous power to send out these messages in a way that is highly tailored to groups of users. So we can both work at scale without losing sort of specificity. And let's see what I have. I thought that I would throw up the parameters for the messages just to give you a little bit of a sense. You know, if anyone is interested in working with us on any of these campaigns, there's no need to write these down right now. But you can see sort of the length of, we have a title, a body, and then it'll link out to somewhere else. And, you know, one of the biggest, so I've been in this job for 2 years, and one of the biggest sort of interesting learnings that I've had is that people really do click on these. It's often the first question that I get when I'm in rooms like this, because I think for many of us, and certainly for me, I think I was trained from a very young age to ignore advertisements of all kinds, especially online. But that is not the case with these, and the only sort of hypothesis that I have for why that is that this is really coming from an LGBT source, and in some ways a trusted source, a source that people are using every day. So, you know, whether that's sort of the exact reason or not, we know that people are really clicking through. So, for example, when we did our World AIDS Day message last year, we had like 45,000 click-throughs within the United States. Sometimes that's even sort of more per capita if you're doing something more specific to an area, and then, you know, sometimes it's more when you're just doing a larger area. But I do think it's notable that people are really engaging with these messages, and one way that we really saw that was over the past year, we've done a big push on PrEP in the United States and a couple of other countries where it's also approved. And after about a year and a half of the program, we did a survey to sort of assess how we were doing with it, and we found that 1 in 5 guys who were on PrEP today cited our messaging as being a key reason why they ended up talking to their provider about PrEP to find out whether it was really right for them. So I think this kind of brings me to a little bit of what I wanted to ask of public health folks in the room today, which is, you know, when you take this example of how well we're pushing PrEP, I think that what has been really hard for us is to determine, you know, how do we do something like this while also keeping STDs in the conversation. So up to this point, really what that's looked like is just including messages that say, you know, PrEP does not protect you from STDs. There's been really no better or more thorough or nuanced messaging on how we can sort of provide potential strategies or help people think about how to protect themselves from STDs in sort of this time of PrEP. And it's been really interesting, actually, to be at this conference and hear that, you know, when we started the PrEP program, mostly what I was hearing from people working on STDs was just sort of entirely negative messages about it, like you shouldn't be pushing that. And it feels to me, at least from this conference, like maybe we are moving past that and trying to think about, you know, what do we want to say? And so that's sort of one of my primary asks of this community, is to help us figure out what the strategies are and what the messaging is that should be going out to all of our guys. I think that that is sort of the overview of what I wanted to say. I think the only other thing that I would add for folks who are not super familiar with Grindr or this app culture in general is that I think it's important to know that sometimes there is a perception that people are using these apps specifically and exclusively to look for sex right now. And sort of as a brand, we do not necessarily run away from that perception. I think that we are not opposed to the sexuality in the app itself. But I think it's also important for everyone here, and I would say, you know, everyone everywhere, but since we are here, I'm talking to you, to know that that's not actually the only reason why people are using it. When we survey our users, you know, we find that people are using it definitely to find boyfriends or dates, to meet friends, especially when they're moving to a new location, and also just to waste time. That's often sort of the number one reason why people say that they're on the app, is that, you know, instead of playing Candy Crush, they are just on Grindr, seeing who's around, talking to people. And so when I think about, you know, reaching people with public health messages, I do think that that changes sort of what we're talking about, right? Because it's not, you know, sometimes people say, shouldn't all of our messages on here be like really racy or really sexual? Because that's really the mindset that people are in. And I find that that's not really true. That really the way that we should think about this is just that we have a captive audience who are interested and by and large want to protect themselves. So we should just be thinking of them sort of like any other LGBT people that we would be reaching any other way. I think that's all. Oh, and then I guess the only other thing to clarify, because I think my two co-panelists set me up a little bit, that our sort of big data is not currently available to public health folks. There are ways in which we can work together to get you some data. You know, one way is through sort of these informal polls, which have helped people in local jurisdictions determine some of what's going on with gay and bi men in their area. Another way is when we run individual ads in an area, you do get a certain amount of data back about how people have engaged with it. And then sometimes we are able to provide a kind of overview of numbers of people in an area. But this is not sort of like a big new source of open source data for people to be planning all of their programming around. So just to preempt that question a little bit. And I'm happy to take questions.
Jumped in fast. I knew people were going to come. Right. So Jeff again from Virginia. So I'm asking this because we actually discussed this when we were talking about these discussions. I think it's good, you know, for public health programs to think about. So if a public health agency is interested in working with you guys, and you know, collaboratively, there's an agreement that you know, we'll do whatever it might be. Maybe maybe there's a syphilis epidemic. And we just
hear there is.
Yeah, we just want to get the word out. But Jack asked me, well, if we were to link to your site, where is it going to go, and what kind of information, you know, are we going to have there for them? And I kind of froze a little bit. I wasn't exactly sure what to say. So I'm wondering if you could just comment on, from your perspective, what would you like to think a public health agency was pointing you to, from a URL perspective?
Great. Well, let me say first that I want to call out one of my partners in the room, which is the Building Healthy Online Communities Coalition, which Jen in the back, do you want to stand up for just a second so people can see you, is a representative of as well. And that program is actually really helping to create and sort of facilitate a dialogue between public health representatives and us as well as other apps. So I would encourage folks who are really thinking about how to best use us to also bring them into the conversation, as I always do when I'm contacted as well. So that's one piece. And then in terms of where I want people to be sent, I mean, when we were having that conversation initially, I was surprised that there wasn't a page at all for on their website that I could point people to about syphilis. So I guess having a place to send people is a first step. I like it to have a mix of sort of general information written in a really accessible style, and then also sort of action steps, like if you're concerned that you're infected or whatever it is, you know, you can call this helpline, you can email this essentially helpline in your area, or you can come into these places for a free test. And then, yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the main stuff. It's like, you know, very accessible. I would encourage people to really think about mobile optimization of your sites as well. We are entirely, there's no way to get on Grindr from a desktop or a laptop, so people are only accessing it from their phones and their tablets. So if your website, I don't know how many of you have tried to access a non-mobile optimized site on your phone, but you really can't read anything. So, you know, basically sending our guys to something like that is next to worthless. So let's not do that. And yeah, I think also to just be consulting other gay and bi men who work in your department, if that is not, if that doesn't apply to you, to make sure that sort of the information you're putting out is relevant and culturally competent. You know, one of my struggles with the HPV vaccine, which has been a pretty big program for us, is that there hasn't been like a really good place to send people. So I currently send them to a page on the CDC site, which is just HPV and men. But, you know, like the language is not, it's a little high literacy. It's not, I would say it's not very warm. I'm sure you've all spent time on the CDC website, and I'm sure there are people who have worked on it in here. That's just sort of my honest opinion from the point of view of our guys. But I'm also happy to work with you on that stuff.
I'm Erica Samoff from North Carolina. We now have a syphilis page.
All right.
I won't say how recently we put it up, but it's there now. Somebody told me at this conference from a CBO that working with the government is like working with Keystone Cops. But we are good at some things.
Great.
Anyway, okay, here's my question. Pricing. Can you talk a little bit about pricing?
Pricing. Oh, great. That's a great question. So there are two ways to get ads onto Grindr. One is through our ad sales department, and I actually cannot speak to their pricing. That is not my area, but I'm happy to connect you with them if you do have a budget for that. If you do have a budget, you have sort of much more granular control over what goes out and how frequently. My job is really to give away these ads for free, sort of for the good of the community. So on an individual basis, we can work together to see what is the best fit for what you want to do and how much you want to do. But I also can say that they do have sort of the rates for people from public health are much lower than for Uber, right? So, and they will work with you to get you what you need.
Alrighty. My name is Mario Diaz at the LA LGBT Center. First, I want to just commend Grindr for the work that it does throughout the world. In terms of, you know, Grindr and apps similar to Grindr, it's often like an introduction for, you know, adolescent gay and bi men and trans women around the world, right, to, you know, folks like them. So I feel, you know, anytime that people come into our clinics, what, you know, when I talk to them, you know, and they have a positive syphilis, chlamydia, gonorrhea result, one of the things, you know, that we ask is, you know, where did you meet your partner, right? Mm. And Grindr or through friends, right, are often the response that we get. And I don't shame them, right, for meeting folks there. What I let them know is, you know, you should probably either let your partner know to come in for testing and treatment, yeah, or they can call me, right, and then I can explain what syphilis is. And I think that anytime I see people coming in, getting, you know, gonorrhea in their butt, you know, getting gonorrhea in their throat, getting syphilis, one of the first things that I do is, if they're HIV negative, is say, hey, have you considered PrEP, right? So if one of the things that Grindr could do is, you know, I've seen so many cases of LGBT young folks who end up testing positive for syphilis, right, or gonorrhea or chlamydia, but not for HIV. So immediately I plug in PrEP and PEP, right? These are good things for you. So if the messaging, if there could be some sort of message that lets people know, hey, if you've had an STD before, maybe you can consider PEP or PrEP, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, PrEP has been sort of our biggest theme for 2016. So the commitment we made on last World AIDS Day was to have at least 2 in-app messages every week somewhere in the United States promoting PrEP. But what we haven't included is that piece, and I have to say it's because I didn't know, that piece about having other STIs increasing your likelihood of getting HIV. So I do think that that's sort of a next step for us.
I'm Chris. I'm with the Department of Public Health in Maricopa County. That's in Phoenix, Arizona. I have 2 questions for you. My first one is, understanding that you guys can segment messages to different groups by gender, age, and whatnot, is there a time limit on how long that message can run for, or do different agencies buy different time slots? And so the reason I ask is a lot of our agencies perform community outreaches.
Yep.
And so we advertise that information on websites or wherever the location's going to be. is it possible for agencies to advertise through Grindr for like a 2-hour period that there's free testing at this location?
Yeah. So I get this question a lot. I actually think that having an ad when you are actively doing your outreach is not the best use of the ad. I think that letting people know for like the 24 hours before is probably better. Most of our ads outside of LA and New York are bought, or when I run them, they're sort of done on a 24-hour timeline. Within New York and LA, people primarily get them for a 12-hour timeline. And I think that, you know, the likelihood that you're going to hit someone right during the 2 hours in which you're testing in your van, and then they're going to sort of make a plan to get there and get tested during that time frame is much lower than if you just let them know right before, or with some of the agencies I work with, we even do just like the whole day before, not sort of the 24 hours before, but the prior day, so that people can kind of make their plan to get tested. But at the same time, as a paying customer, you have a lot of latitude with what you do. And then in working through me, we just sort of make a plan together.
Okay. My next question,
So we have one more question behind you, and just, I know people are sticking around, because we're already over time.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So we're going to do the last one, and then, but if people want to stick around, would our panelists be willing to stick around for a few minutes?
I actually have to get on another call, but you're welcome to email me at jack@grindr.com.
And my question was, how do we get a hold of you?
Oh, great.
Arrange for geofenced advertising, et cetera.
It's jack@grindr.com. I'm sorry, that's not my last slide. The only trick is that Grindr does not have an E. So I sometimes live in fear that people are emailing jack@grindr.com and not reaching me. But
I have just enough savvy to know that.
Great. Thank you, everybody.